Hey, welcome to Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer. I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Jay Kang. Jay's actually been on the road. We've been trying to find a time to talk. We finally got some phone time in. So rather than bringing on a guest, since we hadn't really spoken to each other about any of the big crypto news of the week, we thought we'd just do it here, right here on the show, in real time. And quite fortuitously, since we taped this episode last night, the topic of the episode, Tether, has only gained prominence in the news cycle as it was announced today. I think this is reported in Bloomberg that the CFTC is subpoenaing Tether and Bitfinex, the exchange that is associated with Tether. This show, this episode, starts at a much more basic level of what is Tether? Why does it need to exist? What is the case against it? I'm hoping that it will be interesting to people who have been following this and people to who it's all new. This show is brought to you in partnership with Medium. Of course, our homepage is at medium.com/cointalk, and there's transcripts for every episode there. But additionally, I'd encourage you to check out going to me.dm/crypto. That's Medium's crypto landing page. I've been hitting it daily. In Jay's absence, I don't have Jay to be my personal crypto news wire, so I rely on the good stuff that's updated daily on me.dm/crypto. Huge thanks to Medium for helping support this show, and here is that show. Oh, we've been getting great stuff in our mailbag, and we actually answer a few Twitter mailbag questions at the end of the show, but we still haven't done our big mailbag episode, so send your questions to hi@cointalk.show, and thanks for listening.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Monday, January 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $11,232.
Hello, Jay.
Hey, how's it going?
We've been separated. We've been apart.
Yeah, well, I've been traveling a bit across the tundras of Minnesota and Canada. And you know, after a couple days, I got to say, Aaron, I miss getting your constant updates through Telegram about Bitcoin.
I have been panicking in your absence. This should be fun. We don't have a guest today. We're just going to sort of go over the week together. Normally I feel like we've talked about these things like 8 times before we talk about them on the show. This time they'll be totally fresh. Fair amount happened in between our last taping and now.
Yeah, I mean I actually feel like Bitcoin was declared dead 2 more times, I think, by pretty prominent people, which actually was kind of an eventful week because I felt like we had reached this point where we didn't have like any Bitcoin is going to take over the world stories for a while, obviously. But it also seemed like people were starting to settle into some sort of normalcy, saying, well, maybe this is just going to be a thing that's going to take a little bit more time to figure out than we thought it was.
Yeah, it's everything has. Well, first of all, I want to thank the listeners to this show who have very kindly sent us some great questions and given us some feedback that at times we're like moving a little too fast, or, you know, I feel like we're like maybe a few months ahead and are on this obsessive journey. So we are going to make an attempt to define the basics as we go. Although, ironically, I feel like I don't even really understand the basics myself.
Yeah, it's like at some point, because of the, I think because of the functions of the conversations that you and I would have, we had to like memorize little slug lines on what certain things were,
yeah.
You know, and so, and these were all from very, very dubious sources. And so I think we've gotten slightly past that. And so perhaps like we can go back a few months,
yes.
Cause you know, as we are trying to create this show for, to be an inviting place for crypto newcomers and just sort of, you know, relearn a lot of this stuff, I think, and re-explain a lot of this stuff that I think would be good for us to relearn and explain.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes. And this should be fun because we're really kind of fresh, haven't talked to each other about this stuff.
Some of the stuff that I think has come out this week is stuff that I felt like eventually we were going to hear about. Tether has been something that's sort of felt like a ticking time bomb, always kind of lingering in crypto news. That's something I think we should definitely talk about. What do you feel like talking about?
I think we should talk about Tether, and I guess we should really start by, Aaron, like, do you, Tether, honestly, the first time we did a basement tape, I think it was the first
thing we talked
conversation
about
that you and I had. Aaron, like, since that was about 2 to 3 months ago, can you explain to me what a Tether is?
Well, I think before we can really, like, get to Tether, we have to describe, like, why Tether needs to exist in the first place. And the reason Tether needs to exist in the first place is fiat gateway, which is to say, to get cryptocurrencies, you need to trade US dollars or your local currency. And that's in some ways the most difficult jump in the whole ecosystem. It's the most regulatorily difficult. It has the most like tax implications. It's kind of the like biggest question.
Yeah, and it also is this sort of, I would say that in terms of sort of discomfort,
yes,
right? Like nothing makes people more uncomfortable than putting their banking information online, especially if it's something that's not regulated that they're not really sure they want to get into.
You got to so reveal your identity in order to do it, usually.
Yeah. You have to confirm your identity on a lot of these crypto exchanges in ways that don't feel entirely
you
safe.
You have to
like,
confirm
example,
that
you are
Jay's dad.
Yeah, or you have to take very very shaky screenshots of your driver's license and upload them like 15 times, and at some point, whatever is going on at the exchange, they're like, "Oh yeah, this is probably the person because they sent us like 15 photos."
It's basically what you'd have to do to like do a proof of life if you'd been like kidnapped. You need to take like a grainy photo on someone's laptop camera. So
yeah, exactly.
So this is always like a kind of a big deal, and one of the reasons that Bitcoin has always been central to every single thing that's happened in crypto is Bitcoin serves generally as that fiat gateway. Traditionally, people have traded their currency for Bitcoin. And then Tether came along. So to your mind, like what purpose does Tether fill?
Well, I mean, I do think we should at some point just explain what a Tether
is.
Sure.
What is one Tether?
A Tether is a cryptocurrency that is pegged to the United States dollar, allegedly.
Right.
So that if you put a dollar into a market that has Tether and you get a Tether back, Tether, the company that makes Tether, will tell you that that Tether that you get is representative of a dollar, regardless of how you spend it, regardless of the market of Tethers, regardless of you know what happens to the crypto market. That one Tether is worth $1,
and
so it's almost like it's almost like a Disney buck, right? Like that's how I think described it earlier, which is that when you go to Disneyland, you have like a dollar that's a Disney buck.
Yeah, I mean, generally reserved for like Disneyland, some like Caribbean resorts. You know, these are basically the only
like
places that
like sandals.
Yeah,
dollars.
Those are the kind of places where you like pay with drinks with their native currency. Cruise ships, I think. The idea isn't super complicated. And the second part of the idea is that for every dollar that's out there with a Tether, which is the net supply of Tether, this company that maintains Tether will keep one US dollar in reserve. And that will guarantee and forever peg Tethers to that growing reserve of US dollar currencies.
Yeah, so as part of cryptocurrency and the idea, right, is a sort of railing against the idea that you can't make money out of nothing. And so what Tether, the company, which is, I think, located in Hong Kong, and also they have an office in San Francisco, I think, but what they have said is that every single Tether they print is backed by one US dollar that they hold in reserve. And that has been sort of a point of contention. I would say as long as you and I have
definitely
been in crypto, maybe a few months later, like, I mean, the sort of Tether scandal.
Almost immediately, though. I mean, I feel like part of the story of Tether is not the story of, oh, we thought this was totally legitimate and we discovered a flaw. It's been more like people were immediately like, that's very sketchy. And then it like, and it continues to seem even more sketchy. And it like, the story gets worse. Like, at no point did someone say this is like a great idea.
Well, I mean, but they did use it.
But people have very actively used it without reservations, it doesn't seem. I mean, there's a huge amount of Tether volume on exchanges. And then
it's used in all the big exchanges right now.
And then we should say that
except for GDAX and Coinbase.
After trading your US dollars for Tether, you can use that Tether to buy Bitcoin or any variety of cryptocurrencies directly. Like, there's massive US dollar Tether trading pairs on tons of major exchanges, which means there's millions and millions of Tethers sitting on many big exchanges. So why do people not believe in this Tether system?
Well, I mean, first of all, it seems very difficult to believe that when you watch the way in which they get printed, and obviously everyone can see the way that they're printed because it is put out on a blockchain, and also because, like, you know, there are a lot of people tracking this right now, that it's they come out in very strange amounts. Like, they come out in very round numbers, like 500 million or something like that, and that that it's very hard to imagine that if there is suddenly $500 million of new U.S. dollars entering the market at any given time. There's a lot of conspiracy theories that come up about this because Tether, the company, is pretty, I would say, shadowy. Like, we don't know that much about it.
I know that there's like a bunch of like pretty well put together criticism of Tether, but I'm not totally clear exactly on what the story is. Can you give me like the 2 minute?
Some time ago, there was an anonymous Twitter user named Bitfinext, right? And he also had a YouTube channel called Bitfinext. And he started telling this story, which seemed somewhat plausible to me at the time, that Tether as fake money and the company Tether was printing hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars in Tethers with no backing and
just
sending
to say,
them to a variety of accounts
that do not have a US dollar in their reserve paired with them.
Yeah, just straight up fake money. And sending them to a variety of accounts within the Bitfinex exchange, which is one of the biggest exchanges in the world. And what he was arguing was happening was that that fake money was being used by people within the company Bitfinex to manipulate the price of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies in a variety of ways, which he would show in these completely opaque YouTube videos that would play like sort of trance music in the background. And then you would see like an order book filling up and a chart going up and down. And then he would draw these little lines and be like, that's the moment. And unless you knew exactly what he was talking about, it's completely incomprehensible. But
oh, yeah. Well, his secondary claim, which I'm just not. I don't have the background to evaluate, is that you can see the production of these Tethers and when they hit the market and correlate it with these huge Bitcoin runs that led up to that peak at over $19,000. And so he's basically, am I understanding that wrong?
I think that is a sort of, I think that's an extrapolation of what he was saying by a lot of other people. So I don't think you're wrong. And I think that's where some of the confusion came in, was that people started wondering if Tethers were, you know, that we were living in sort of this matrix where we were just actually living in a world of Tether now, and that the actual Bitcoin world had been left behind. So what he was, in the end, I think what he was saying, and I think this is the part that's been picked up, which is that every time Bitcoin makes a sort of tanking move or the crypto markets start to drop, that you'll have Tethers be printed and that those accounts within Bitfinex will use the fake money to put in a variety of sort of market manipulation tactics, whether it's wash trading or putting up sell walls or all this sort of stuff to try and make sure that Bitcoin doesn't go down past a certain amount. And, you know, the reasons for that is, you know, it's kind of obvious. Like, you know, it's good for an exchange to have a healthy currency. It's good for the people who are,
to be fair, if they hold Bitcoin. The Tether company could easily put any of these rumors to rest by simply allowing for an open audit of the company. So
yes,
a lot of this is basically an insinuation that they're guilty because they could very easily prove themselves innocent were they actually being, you know, transparent. And so I do think that there, it's not like a total like conspiracy theory. In some ways, it's like someone refusing a something that in any sort of a regulated market would be a very basic request.
Yeah, or actually just the law, you know. So when this theory first started coming out, Aaron, I remember you and I would have talks about it. And honestly, this prompted my first, like, I sold everything and completely exited all crypto markets because of this. Do you remember?
Yeah, this is definitely the kind of theory actually, that can, like, you can be like, and I decided after I researched it that it's probably right, and I have sold everything I ever had.
It scared me. I mean, I would say this was, what, 4 months ago or something. And the reason why it scared me was because I felt like it did explain some of the irrationality of some of the markets. You know, why money kept getting pumped in. I couldn't see why worldwide this would be such a big idea. And also just the sort of shadiness of the Tether company and clean with anything. All that felt very fishy to me, but I eventually, you know, sort of came around and was like, I don't know if that's a big deal, which is where you were. So, Aaron, why did you not feel like it was a big deal?
Well, it's not necessarily true that even if there's been some funny business at Tether, the market's necessarily going to go a lot lower than it is now. I mean, I do think that's a convincing argument, but I also think there's an explanation that's somewhere in between here, which is just that a lot of people do want to buy Tether because they want to buy crypto, and there's like a huge flood of people, or there was, particularly during the time period we're talking about, late 2017, a huge flood of people into crypto markets. And probably Tether is both taking money and engaging in some funny business. And probably Tether and Bitfinex, if this is true, are making a lot of money off of it. I'd be most worried about holding Tether, which I would not do.
Okay, so of the more strident and of the more, I guess, reputable people who have picked up this theory is Nouriel Roubini, who is a professor at the Stern School of Business at NYU, so a guy who certainly has some bona fides. He's been tweeting up a storm for the last 3 days. Yeah.
It's funny when, you know, people who are like, you can have like a bunch of broad interests in economics, but then eventually you just like are reduced to a dude who's just ranting about like crypto on Twitter. That's basically our destiny, minus the academic bona fides. But
there's only one way to tweet about Bitcoin. Yeah, right. It's got you got.
Yeah.
Go
so he's pumped up about taking down Tether.
I honestly, even more so than Bitfinex or some of the other sort of big people who have been saying that, you know, Bitcoin is essentially fake, he has the most apocalyptic vision of all of this of anybody. Yep. And, you know, he's been tweeting things like total loss when price collapses to near zero once manipulation is over, you know, and this is sort of, he's written an op-ed about it. He's talked about the crash, and he has come out and essentially said that he believes that when this is exposed, that Bitcoin prices will drop more than 80%.
I
don't think we can dismiss the guy, but like, what do you think?
Well,
about
I mean, look, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of economics professors who think Bitcoin's going to zero. Like that's not particularly newsworthy. I guess I wonder, like, it's like we hear about manipulation in all of these markets, the Korean Ethereum market. I remember, like, you've been like, you know, at some point in like August, you're like telling me about how like manipulated the like Korean Ethereum markets are, and I totally buy it.
They are.
I totally buy it.
That's why.
Like, what is Ethereum or, you know, Bitcoin supposed to be worth? They're supposed to be worth way less money, and then there's like some sort of a magic mojo that pushes them up. I mean, I guess I think everyone wins when the price goes up, and that's like a positive pressure on all of it.
I mean, look, the problem is that when people FOMO in, and if the entire economy is fake and based off this sort of fraud, and then it all collapses and all those people are left holding the bag, like, you know, that's a very bad thing. That's why we have like financial regulations.
So if you take the 80%, like if you take the like idea that it's a house of cards and Tether takes the whole thing down, like how does that, like, how does that scenario unfold?
I think that what would probably have to happen is that the government of Hong Kong or even in the United States, like, you know, because they do have offices in California, that they come out and they basically say that you have to do an audit or we're going to make it illegal for you to operate in these countries, you know. And I think that at that point, that would probably stop a lot of exchanges like Bittrex or other exchanges that might be located in places that like Japan or the United States that are trying to implement some sort of regulations into this. And at that point, Tether would go away and it would not be as prominent. And I think that at that point, if it was going to collapse, it would have collapsed then. Like I honestly, you know, just to put my cards on the table, I have no idea if this is true or not. And I also, you know, I'm a little bit suspicious of the doom and gloom apocalyptic version of it, but that would be the point where we would know, don't you
think? Yeah, I mean, the weirdest claim that Tether makes is that Tether is always worth $1. It's pegged to the dollar. It's just going to be a dollar. What would probably happen in some sort of a scenario that's slightly less apocalyptic with Tether would be that Tether would start trading for way less than a dollar. People would be like, there's some crazy fraud happening at Tether, and Tether like drops to 80 cents and then it drops to 60 cents and drops to 50 cents. And I would think when people would be bailing either heavily to US dollars or to Bitcoin, getting out of Tether as quickly as they could. And I do think that scenario could happen. Like, what's stopping, except, you know, market manipulation, what's stopping Tether from becoming worthless if these questions become bigger and bigger in the press?
I honestly don't know. And like, I think that right now, if you took a real audit of what the value is, I don't think it would be a dollar. It's just, it's really basically a dollar because Tether says it's a dollar, you know? And yes. I think that that has problems both logically, but it also has problems in sort of the philosophy of cryptocurrency itself.
Though it does trade with Bitcoin at a fairly stable, I mean, like, it does work. Like, if you buy some Tether and then buy some Bitcoin with it, you've like acquired the Bitcoin at more or less like a market. If you're just using it as a jump, it works. The crazy part to me is people who are holding large amounts of Tether. That seems like an extremely dangerous thing to do.
I don't know if that exists.
Well, where is all the Tether then? It's just the exchanges all have it? Like, someone's got to own it.
That's another good question.
Someone owns hundreds of millions of dollars in Tether. Maybe just the Tether
company. Please call the show.
I don't know.
Call in on the show, and hopefully we are not related in any sort of way. So, Aaron, I think the best way for us to sort of dispense this and, you know, and sort of get to the bottom of what we know is to try and figure out what facts we know about this. And, you know, it's very, very hard to figure out what facts we know. So one of the things that, and honestly, the most sort of repeated evidence that Bitfinexed, the Twitter account, and his sort of acolytes point to is that when Bitcoin starts a charge, that the action on Bitfinex, the exchange, is more sort of, I guess, violent and a little bit more high volume than the other. Violent is a very strange word to use. But like, is that Bitfinex, the exchange, is leading the way. Now, is that fact or not?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that you can find some evidence of it. You can also find evidence that clearly there's some very high price trading in Korea. We've talked about that. Why is the price so much higher in Korea? I mean, everyone seems to be trying to like push the market in their way. I don't even know. Is Tether like totally international? Is Tether concentrated in certain countries and their exchanges?
I think that not. I don't think so, because I think that it's used on Bittrex and other large exchanges that are used by, you know, people in the West world. The one fact that I was going to bring up was that the biggest spread I think we've ever had between exchanges was that day when Bitcoin spiked all the way up to like 19.9, right?
Yeah.
That was the day that I was in Las Vegas and playing roulette and actually like stopped playing roulette because it was more fun and it felt more degenerate to actually just refresh Blockfolio. That was not a Tether exchange. That was GDAX. That was Coinbase, you know? Yeah. The one exchange that has absolutely nothing to do with Tether at all. Like, you know, like I don't think Brian Armstrong would let Tether in the building. Look, you know, so I don't know.
GDAX and Coinbase were down during huge swings of Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. Like, is that market manipulation? Like, is the price of that like only because people couldn't trade during those periods? The answer is yes. Like, each of these things did influence the price. I'm a firm believer that like what's happening on exchanges and what's happening with like things that power exchanges like Tether is a prime driver of price overall. I mean, the exchanges, and maybe we should talk also about CoinCheck, the Japanese exchange that was hacked this week. Exchanges are in some ways the most vulnerable place in the entire chain. They're the place that could really kick off a true panic situation.
Well, can I ask you one question then, Aaron,
sure,
about all this? Like, so like,
shoot,
we've
fire
basically
away.
Been hearing this. we've been hearing this story for like 6 months now, right? About Bitfinex, Tether, all, and that we don't seem to be getting any closer to a resolution about this. Like you said earlier, Tether did, like, there was some sort of audit agreement and then Tether backed out of it. Like, does this cool you on the crypto market at all?
No. I mean, to me, I avoid Tether. And if Tether does start crashing or the whole thing starts falling apart, I think it will drop the price of Bitcoin. Just like I think there's many, many outstanding factors out there that could drop the price of Bitcoin. On the other hand, if people are holding a bunch of Tether, probably that money will go into Bitcoin. In some ways, some of the failure of other things in the crypto market, I do believe should tip money into Bitcoin, looking, you know, in the medium term. That is my call of the week.
All the people who are holding hundreds
I have
of millions
no
of dollars
idea,
in Tether,
honestly.
Will say,
I really
I'm
don't
just
know.
Buy Bitcoin.
I just kind of feel like everyone's like, this Tether shit's about to happen, and it hasn't happened. Like, at a certain point, there's like a cry wolf factor also that if this situation doesn't budge, you know. Because look, they're launching stablecoin, right? Which is another U.S. dollar like pegged, you know, iteration that's supposedly, I think, more transparent, but is also attempting to do something that Tether does. So it's not like people are stopping with these ventures. It's sort of like when people are like, oh, are like scammy ICOs going to like take the whole thing down? It's like, I don't know, but they're going to keep doing them.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess, is there a level, I guess, of sort of proof of market manipulation and fake money that would make you feel like all of this maybe is worth like 40% of what it's even at right now, and that would scare you?
I just have trouble pegging that to a specific number. I feel like there's just so many outstanding threads of the narrative, and it's very clear that there's shady stuff going on. How much it like changes the overall situation, it still seems like an open question to me.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I mean, I don't think that we know exactly what's happened with this. I think the fact that more prominent people are tweeting about it and that, you know, the newspapers have started to pay attention to it, I don't know if that's evidence of anything except the fact that more prominent people have, you know, watched a Bitfinex video. Like, the amount of wash trading and sort of market manipulation that goes on in Korean exchanges is, I think, is probably way worse than this Tether scam. I think in other countries, the entire, like, large parts of all of the trading is fraudulent or market manipulation. And so I think we're almost looking in the wrong place here.
I also just think, like, for your average American crypto buyer who has a few Bitcoin they bought on Coinbase, you almost feel walled off from this issue. Like, you've never held Tether. Like, it's something that's happening on these more exotic exchanges. Or, I mean, to me, what's happened at like CoinCheck this week, like the Japanese exchange that was hacked, is actually a more scary possibility than that there's going to be some grand revelation of market fraud, which I do believe exists. Like, I think just outright hacks continue to pose, like, considering how much money people still have just sitting on exchanges, the possibility that this whole thing starts falling apart because there's just hacks all the time seems real.
Okay, so like what you're alluding to is, you know, I think it was $500 million of one altcoin called NEM in Japan on one exchange called CoinCheck just going missing. It was stolen.
I mean, it's crazy to me that there was $500 million of one coin. Yeah, that was one altcoin on one exchange. It's like
that was incredible. But if you remember, Aaron, when we did our segment about the cryptocurrency girls, the J-pop sure. band, and we were listing off the girls that
there
were
was
in the
NEM
one of them
girl.
Was any there was
it's
NEM
a different. It's going to be a difficult week for her. I feel like the PR yeah. team is going to want to get her messaging on point there. I mean, it's also crazy. It's like, you steal $500 million of NEM. What this is, I don't know but hardly anything about NEM, but so you've transferred it and it's on the blockchain. So that, as far as I know, NEM is not like a Monero Zcash kind of privacy coin. So you've transferred it to some address. What could you then do with $500 million worth of NEM? There seems to be all sorts of stolen, dead, like what becomes of that in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I guess like some people would say that you could shapeshift it, but that seems like a lot to shapeshift. I don't know. Maybe you just hold on to it or something and you know, try and figure out.
In the case of the Mt. Gox hack, they basically ended up partnering with and basically establishing another exchange in order to launder out all the Bitcoin that had been stolen from Mt. Gox. So I do, the part of the Tether story that I find convincing is the idea that an exchange is like a giant conduit for like not totally legitimate transactions. Like, I don't know if tethers are just being printed or what. Like, I wonder if this is all part of some grander scheme that, as we've talked about in other episodes, may have a lot of money laundering implications.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, the whole thing has been confounding to me, and I can't tell if my sort of lack of panic this time when it's sort of blown up is because I, you know, have basically stopped feeling pain in crypto, or if I've like sort of degen to a way that like to a point where I just can't ever sell. But it's one of the two, or maybe I'm more rational and less prone to panic.
I'm not quite as panicked as you, but as you know, Bitcoin has basically been sideways for a bit, and alts are sort of timidly below, you know, losing value on Bitcoin, which is sideways. It does feel increasingly like there's like a price to just lingering in the market, like even just sort of being stable in Bitcoin value and US dollar value. You're still kind of like, I'm always running the risk of an exchange getting hacked and me losing all this stuff, Tether being revealed as a fraud and Bitcoin suffering a massive crash. Like it does feel like as long as it's not going up, it feels kind of a little like unsettling having money just sitting there in this kind of unsettled market.
Yes. I mean, look, and this is not particularly relevant, but especially when like the S&P 500 index is like outperforming Bitcoin, you know, you just put it in there. Or like somebody that was on Twitter today talking about how much he had made something like crazy, like 40,000% increase in a month, or 400x on an investment, I think on Robinhood. And all he was doing was shorting crypto related companies that like ballooned up, and then he would just short them, and then he made a bunch of money that way. So yeah, I think that you know, the sideways nature of it right now and this sort of like funk that we're in, I guess some people will probably start wondering, you know, why they even have the money in the market. I don't think that's true of you and me, but I think
on the other hand, you alluded to Robinhood. Robinhood has announced that they're going to be doing crypto buys now. It's definitely coming to the Square Cash app. So a lot of people like it turned on in their app this week. It does feel like, you know, the vital fiat gateway is about to get a lot wider, and there's going to be much easier, much more competitive ways to buy Bitcoin. Like, it's kind of crazy the fees that people have been paying with Coinbase, considering how much money has been flowing in. Robinhood is now saying they're going to do completely 0% no fee Bitcoin transactions, which would, I would think, push the price up if you just cut that out of the equation.
Yeah, I I'll be completely honest, and you know, maybe this is too broad and philosophical of a discussion to have on this, but like, I've started to like think a lot about like sort of Nassim Taleb's book and also like Walter Benjamin when it comes to sort of these narratives about whether Bitcoin is going to go up or going to go down, where I feel like I'm constantly fooled by randomness and my desire to create a linear narrative as to why this thing is doing like going up or going down. And at this point, I think I've just thrown it all in. I'm just like, I have no idea. Like, apparently, like last week, I felt like there's all this good news. Like, you know, like Korea was not, doesn't seem like it's going to ban Bitcoin trading. I thought that was going to be amazing news. Like, you know, the Robinhood announcement came out and nothing happened, you know? And then at the same time, on the other end, you have this sort of spreading Bitfinex thing. You have a lot of different sort of a lot of more prominent people calling for like the end of it, and it nothing seems to matter. And so at this point, I've just given up trying to predict based on narrative and based on sort of news what's going to happen.
It reminds me a little bit of the evolution of the news cycle itself, where news just had became, there became so much news and it became so overwhelming and there was like so real time that people were unable to differentiate what was a big story and what wasn't a big story. And everyone just becomes this sort of like blurred news addiction. I feel like a little bit with crypto, there's like constantly something happening that's so bad and also things that seem so good. And overall, you kind of like, I mean, it comes back to the basic like HODL philosophy. Like if you're actually sitting there trying to like read the direction of the wind, you're probably like, you know, seeing patterns in the stars, you know?
Yeah. And so you should just sort of ride it out. All right. So talking about exchanges, I had I wanted to sort of put a tweet by you to just get you to respond to it. It has to do with sort of the way in which an ideal exchange would be run. I think that you and I belong to a lot of exchanges, which is, and that we would, you know, we exchange a lot of jokes.
I'm not
about
sure I belong to them, but I do have accounts on them.
Is that too strong of a word? Okay. You and I have put in burner email addresses and signed up
I've
for
used,
a lot of
I've used real
that.
Email addresses, but good times.
So this is Peter Brandt, who is a sort of divisive figure, I think, in crypto. He's one of the more, I would say that he's one of the godfathers or grandfathers of technical analysis, chart candle watching is what we called it, I think, in general. And he's had a lot of thoughts about Bitcoin. And he put out some recommendations for an exchange. He said that it must be 1, US-based, 2, no tethers, only fiat, 3, registered in some state as a trust company, 4, offer at least 10 coins, 5, low fees, and then he puts as a parenthetical, that leaves Coinbase off the list, and 6, responds to inquiries quickly. So what do you think about Peter Brandt's sort of pie-in-the-sky idea about what an exchange should be?
I mean, in some ways, I do identify with the idea of, like, if you believe this Tether thing is a bad thing, like, don't do business with Tether. Like, if you think that, you know, markets in some country are manipulated, like, don't go on exchanges on them. Like, you know, use the system that you yourself believe in. On the other hand, I don't know why people think that, like, American exchanges or exchanges that, you know, have these various qualities are necessarily, like, so reputable. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would agree.
There's plenty of scammers in this country.
There's a little bit of jingoism. Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's basically saying, like, you know, Wall Street during the 80s, like, you know, at least it was in America, you know, like, it just seems like there's probably as much history of economic fraud here than anywhere else. I would say that I, you know, look, it sounds like a great idea, but I mean, I just like have a hard time. Like, why is this not possible? You know, I think that's probably what he's saying. Like, why can't we have this?
And maybe we will down the line. I mean, you know, if you read crypto as being really early right now, like, who knows what exchanges will look like in a couple years? Doesn't seem to look like this, you know. This doesn't seem like it's gonna be the situation forever. And you already see companies that are like much more consumer minded, that are already much deeper like intertwined with financial systems, moving into crypto. So in some ways, like, the Bitfinex exchange may be something of the past in, you know, 5 years.
I mean, but is this sort of like, what would your wish list of what an exchange should look like? Like, what would you list? Would you add anything to his?
I mean,
to his list?
I think improving the user experience and the consumer experience is as important as any of the sort of transparency safeguard effects. Like, to me, like, none of this stuff is real until it's, you know, a product that's competitive with like the best stuff that's happening on phones. I don't know. Is that frivolous?
Well, no, but like, do you not think that Coinbase is really like sort of attractive and easy to use? Because I mean, I have huge problems with Coinbase in terms of the fee prices, in terms of, you know, what seemed to me at least like a pretty shady way to handle the release of Bitcoin Cash. And also, you know, I think Brian Armstrong's general sort of weird Ethereum surf maximalism. But I don't know. I think it's really easy to use. I think that's why people sort of gravitated towards it. But
yeah, you know, I think they're like, the market leader in that. But I do think that you will see better and easier. And I also think, you know, if you consider it as a user experience challenge, having it go down during crucial periods is a massive user experience problem. It's probably the biggest one. Yeah, the most serious problem would be if you cannot buy or sell during certain moments. So I think,
or like when something goes wrong and you have like, yes, tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
or thousands,
I mean, I'm not just talking about stake, like
they don't get back to you.
The like graphic. I'm not talking about the like user interface design. I'm talking about like, how does this operate? Like, if it's your primary, you rely on it kind of service. You know, Twitter operated in a specific way and was down a lot, and then eventually they got it together and it's able to maintain uptime during like crucial periods. Like, it feels like if Coinbase can't maintain like perfect uptime and you can really buy and sell at any moment, yeah, that's something that like gives you pause.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. And I think that the one thing that I would add would be that anyone who can, and there is an exchange or people in Japan who are starting to do some of this, I think, anyone who could sort of give you some security about the fact that you probably won't get hacked, or even if you forget certain passkeys that you're not going to lose it all, I think they'll have a huge advantage as well. And so like whoever ends up winning this exchange war in the United States, and it might be Coinbase, would be, you know, I don't think fees are as important.
Here's
honestly,
my,
because I don't think the average user makes that many.
Here's my bullshit tech critic prediction. I predict that venture capitalists are going to burn huge sums of money trying to build businesses that make it easier and easier and own that market. Like, I think there's going to be a huge, huge number of people vying for that business. And as a result, I think the experience should get pretty good. I think that's it's ultimately bullish if Silicon Valley wants to spend hundreds of millions of dollars developing the consumer infrastructure for crypto, which I think it probably does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, that money is starting to be spent already in a lot of places. One final question, Aaron, which I, you know, before we go, and, you know, this is something, again, this is a broader philosophical question. I think, my time ice fishing over the past.
Yeah, no, I understand you're in a
more philosophical
mood.
Mindset.
You're considering what
not
what the real
fish.
Nature of the blockchain really is.
All right. Would you rather have a well-regulated, user experience friendly, completely secure, and more stable ecosystem around Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, or is part of the fun for you the sort of chaos of it, the fact that there are all these shady characters around the world, and that, like, you know, at any point you could have all of it gone? Like do you actually think you want sort of the better version?
It's a great question. I think back, you know, I'm a hoarder of many things. I'm a hoarder. I'm a collector of digital music. I remember the period, there was a torrent site called Oink.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Oink?
I had it. Yeah. That was like one of my, Yeah, that was one of my proudest moments as like a digital human was when I got an invite.
Yeah, so it was scarce, and if you felt like you had something of a secret knowledge, it was incredibly useful. It was incredibly like exciting. It was probably the peak of like crazy rare stuff being online and just like really like vibrant, like really completist like community. And then it ended. And then it's been like replaced by things like Spotify that, you know, are in some ways much easier to use and have like a lot of stuff on them. And like, you can't really complain about it, but in some ways it was kind of more fun when it was like a little more rogue. I feel like that's sort of my like feeling about crypto. Sure. Like, I can't really like, I don't think it's sustainable for it to stay exactly like it is now. So I predict it will feel more sanitized. On the other hand, I think that'll be like kind of fascinating in its own right. I think that the like super, super mainstream stuff is going to be like a wild ride also. And like the money may just like get really, really, really crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's actually a very apt example. I mean, you know, it was much more fun for me to try and figure out how to get like FLAC files of every single song that the Silver Jews recorded.
Absolutely.
Than it is to go on Spotify and like get the recommended songs and be too lazy to look for the albums that I want to listen to. I don't even think the Silver Jews are on Spotify.
I don't think Drag City was on Spotify. But yeah, I guess I also think though, like think about how much broader swath of business becomes available when something is like a true iPhone product that can live on your homepage and like sit next to your like banking icon, you know? Like, I do think that like when like your Bitcoin account like starts competing with your bank account, like as like a, you know, a place that you just like have money on your phone, that's kind of like when I think this like will really have reached whatever its peak is.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't mean to answer my own question here, but I actually think that that's when I'll probably be completely uninterested in it. Like for me, it is kind of the thrill of it and the shadiness of it and the fact that you, in the same way that, you know, like we felt when we were on Oink's Pink Palace, that we were sort of, you know, like we were sort of scamming, you know, that we were like doing something that we weren't quite supposed to do, but we were benefiting from it.
And it was also a bit utopian because it was like, wow, if you just like let like a group of people like assemble this, it'll be like greater than any like thing that's ever been put together, like as an official store or anything like that. You know, and I still feel that utopian feeling in Bitcoin, even for all of its like absolute silliness. Like it is, you know, it is a grand experiment that I'm pretty surprised made it this far.
Yeah. And like, there's a whole social element to it as well, you know, where like right now, I think we're still in the space where you and I can meet somebody like Ledger Status, or we can talk to somebody like Doug, or, you know, when we go out and we hear someone talking about Bitcoin, that we feel like there's some sort of like slightly sketchy conversation that we're about to have, which is exciting. I think once that's gone, for me at least, you know, as somebody who like, you know, the money is obviously important, but it's not as important as sort of my sort of degenerate interest in it. I think at that point I'll be less interested in it. And so I guess the conclusion that I came to all of this is that like, I don't really care if Bitfinex is making it all fraud and if we really are going to zero, like, you know,
it's a little bit the like, oh, you're like worried about like something that's happening in 7 years, but like we all may get like nuked by like a North Korean, like volley against Trump. It's like, yeah, we'll like cross the street when we come to it. You know, like I just, cool. All right. Well, we have some guests coming up this week, so we'll check back in then. Jay's back in town. We'll be back on regular schedules, and we also totally appreciate people who've sent in stuff to the mailbag. Oh, hey, I put on Twitter right before we started recording that people should tweet us some questions. Shall I see if anyone did it? Let's see.
Yeah.
We've got let's see. First Hollywood crypto movie is following which narrative? Oof, that's a tough one. What do you think? I think I've got my answer.
I don't think it's Bitfinexed. If I had to guess, it would definitely be like some 19-year-old who got super rich and then things went really bad.
Okay, see, I was going to go more specific.
Kidnapped?
I think we're like 2 years from a Vitalik biopic. Like an indie movie that plays at Sundance about Vitalik.
Okay, follow-up question to you, Aaron. Yeah. Would you finance that? Would you help finance that?
I think we could probably do like an Ethereum, like issue a token that like gives you future profits from the Vitalik biopic Kickstarter kind of campaign and get this thing off the ground like no problem.
Well, I would imagine that some of the people who got Ethereum rich might need some place to put their money, so maybe they won't.
I just want to point out that is my idea, and anyone who makes that movie now has to pay me. Okay, let's see. We got any other questions here? Oh, we've got a question from Adrian Chan, friend of the show, Adrian Chan. He says, "Who is Satoshi?" No. Well, that's an easy one. Clearly, the person who's asking is the person who's trying to hide that he is Satoshi.
Yeah, well, we're going to have Adrian on the podcast once he returns from his sort of wander yard in Los Angeles. And, you know, I think that we should both ask him if he is Satoshi, because that theory is certainly out there.
I mean, put it this way. He's like, among people I know, he's definitely the most likely to be Satoshi. Yes, it's unlikely that I know Satoshi, but he's definitely like the betting favorite of people I know. Okay, we got one more question here from Cal O'Boyle. He says, "I know nothing about cryptography. Will mining become easier and currency less scarce with the potential increased computing power of future mining rigs?"
No, because then the difficulty would just go.
Yeah, I feel like mining is one of those things that, like, I don't know, maybe there's some people who think they have some secret edge. And I don't know, if you have like an entire like factory full of mining rigs in like a certain like country where you can get almost free electricity, maybe you can make money. But in a personal basis, it just kind of seems like the system adjusts itself and like your rewards should be fairly consistent, which are kind of like subsistence level. Like you can farm a little.
Yeah, and I think, look, that's one of the, I mean, we've been talking about some of the more alarming and bad things about crypto, but that certainly is one of the more elegant and sort of
Yeah. Proven
parts of crypto, right? Like,
I feel like if you're gonna mine, but like all the get rich quick mining schemes, someone before you has thought of that get rich quick mining scheme, so it won't work. Like, you're gonna do about as well as everyone else, which is like, okay, like if your like dorm doesn't charge you for electricity, you can probably like make a few $100 this semester. Go to town. Okay, yeah. Well, I think that that about covers things. We'll be back later this week. Very nice talking to you, Jay.
Nice talking to you.
Talk to you soon.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Monday, January 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $11,232.